Who's our next guest?
We got no one.
We need a new format. We should shut down and retool.
Welcome to the Party Wreckers Podcast, hosted by professional interventionists Matt Brown and Sam Davis. This is a podcast for families or individuals with loved ones who are struggling with addiction or alcoholism and are reluctant to get the help that they need. We hope to educate and entertain you while removing the fear from the conversation. Stay with us and we'll get you through it. Please welcome the Party Wreckers, Matt Brown and Sam Davis.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Matt Brown, and I'm here with Sam Davis. We're so glad you decided to join us for this next episode of our podcast. Thanks for being here. Sam, how's everything? You're in Houston tonight.
Yeah, coming to you, not live, but coming to you from downtown Houston, Texas, getting ready to I was invited down to listen to Brene Brown, to see her in person and listen to her talk tomorrow at a conference. So really excited about that.
I'm a little jealous. I'm a little envious. She is one of my favorite authors, and I'm glad you get a chance to be there and hear her speak. You're going to have a good time.
Absolutely. It's been very pleasurable so far, meeting some people and going out to dinner, and it's a good time. It's a good time.
Well, there's a group of you that you and I know some of the same people. There's a group down there going to see her, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's in a spring. I'm going to get reprimanded for this. I don't know of the Spring Council or the Recovery Council.
Oh, okay. Yeah. They're the Houston Council. Yeah. They're like an outpatient program down there in the Houston area, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. It's about 1,500 people coming to see her, and it's here at the Hilton in downtown. Beautiful hotel. I've never stayed here before, and it's tomorrow at 11 o'clock, by 1,500 people are going to descend at Work and Behavioral Health or in recovery themselves and going to listen to Brene Brown.
That's awesome.
We've got some mutual friends of ours. Ruth Ann Rigby has been around here for a long time, and just a wonderful, wonderful lady, full of great energy. We've got Courtney that invited me down. She's with Black Horse Health. Got to spend some time with her. Great, great woman. And Eric Button is here.
He's a guy that we need to get on here. We need Eric. Yeah. We've talked about him a few times on here, and I think we're doing the world a disservice by keeping him from being heard by, I don't want to say the masses, because we're not being listened to by masses by any stretch, but you know, I think the people that do tune into us would certainly get a kick out of Eric.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, he's one I've had my eye on to want to get on here for sure. It's just nailing him down. He travels all the time. He's just a bundle of energy and positive energy. He's just a great demonstration of what freedom and recovery looks like. It really is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, let's before we launch into this, let's plug the training here for the last time. This is really the last time we're going to have a chance to talk about the training in Portland, Oregon. It's happening a week from Saturday. Oh. I guess Alexa wanted to chime in there as well. Here in my office, I got one of those devices. Apparently, she's eavesdropping on us tonight. But yeah, April 27th and 28th, Portland, Oregon, at Cielo Treatment Center. Sam and I are going to be there. It's going to be here in about a week. We're going to be descending on the city of Portland and training some people who want to learn about intervention work and admissions work and just working with families in crisis.
It's the first one we've had out on the West Coast, and I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to it. It's really not my stomping grounds out there. That's yours.
It is. It is. And you know, just to prepare you, Portland's a little bit of a different universe than what you might be used to. Let's just put it this way. I look forward to seeing some of your reactions as we are in and around Portland this next weekend. It's going to be fun to just kind of watch you be in Portland.
So we may, this is like Little Mouse Goes, or what is it? Country Mouse Goes to the City.
Something like that. Something like that. It's an experience.
Yeah. I can't wait. I've heard a lot about it. You know, you got to remember now, I sobered up in Austin, Texas, and Austin is the most, I say liberal city in the South. So I have seen some things, and it really opened my eyes to a lot. I'm so grateful for it, because I realized that through my addiction and living where I lived and you know, I traveled some, but I still had a lot of belief systems that were very kept me in a bubble, you know, and sobering up in a city that or an area with a bunch of different people from different backgrounds and experience and all that really opened my eyes and awakened, you know, an openness to other things, you know, if that makes any sense.
It does.
I'm trying to be very delicate here in what I say.
No, you're good. I mean, the thing that I have the hardest time with when I go to Portland, and I'm there all the time for work, and, you know, I don't live but, you know, a couple hours from Portland, but everybody there rides bikes on purpose. And I've never quite understood that, because where I come from, you ride a bike because you've lost your driver's license. You know, a bike is a penalty, but people in Portland like to ride bikes for fun as just a mode of transportation. And that never really made sense to me.
Yeah.
I'm always worried I'm going to run somebody over.
Yeah. When where I'm from, if you're riding a bicycle, you got a DUI.
Exactly.
So multiple DUIs. Multiple.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's fun. That is funny.
Well, it'll be nice to see you in person, and hopefully the next episode we record, we'll be sitting in a hotel room together doing another one, just like we did back in January.
Most definitely. Yeah, I look forward to it, man. It's always nice to work with you and be face-to-face with you and get out and train some people. It's a good time, and I was telling them tonight because, you know, everybody at the table was like, hey, yeah, you're doing those trainings. That's great. That's awesome. We want to get you down here and y'all can do a training here. I mean, we'd love it. I said, well, Texas is, you know, we have a big turnout in Texas every time we're here. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, we've never had a bad review of our trainings. Never. And I enjoy doing them. You enjoy doing them. We mesh very well. And we complement each other really well. And I'm tickled to do it. Very grateful to have the opportunity.
Yeah. And just as a side note, if you happen to see Rob Park at the get together tomorrow, talk to him about, cause he had asked about hosting one of our trainings this year at Luna there in Houston. So if you happen to run into him, let him know that we'd love to have him host us and see how many people we can get to come out for that one.
Sure. Absolutely will. Before we get started, remember, you know, intervention on call. It's where not every family needs an intervention, but every single family that's dealing with someone that's struggling with deep emotional pain that's resulting in addictions in some way, shape, form, or fashion, families need guidance. And we developed this to, you know, enable families to get on-demand sessions with intervention professionals that aren't there to sell you an intervention or sell you a treatment program. We're there to just give you guidance in the hour and what you need in the situation that you face. It's a good thing. I believe it's the best thing to hit addiction treatment since I don't know. I was going to say sliced bread, but sliced bread didn't hit addiction treatment. So
I think it takes away a lot of the fear and the intimidation from the conversation for families, you know, kind of like what we're trying to do with this podcast is just really take away some of the mystery and take away some of the fear from the conversation, because families, even tonight, like I was doing the friends and family Thursday night call just before you and I hopped on here tonight. And we had somebody new on the session tonight. I had a few, but one in particular, just really felt like her family wasn't going to really want to jump in and do an intervention because of this preconceived idea of what they felt like an intervention was going to be. That was just going to be a lot of conflict and that it would just kind of quickly spiral out of control if the family tried to get together and do this. And I think that, you know, what we do there on intervention on call and prepping families, and even in the Thursday night meetings that we do with friends and families, I think that it just takes away a lot of that mystery and really kind of establishes what an intervention actually is, and especially what it's not if it's done well.
Well, what is friends and family, man? I mean, we're talking about it, but I don't think we've told anyone that listens to the podcast exactly what you're doing on Thursday nights at 8 o'clock Eastern time.
All right. Well, I will explain it. Thank you for the segue there. Every Thursday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, we do an hour for free on intervention on call. Anybody who has a loved one in active addiction who's in treatment. We have several families that come on a regular basis whose loved ones are already in treatment. and they're just wanting to get some support around boundaries and really kind of talk about, okay, what are some of the next steps we need to be looking at? How do we keep the Jersey wall, as you talked about last week? How do we keep that Jersey wall tight and strong? And so we talk with families as a group, but we talk with families individually for the benefit of the group about specific circumstances going on so that we can coach them in real time on how to help their loved ones, whether they're in treatment or prior to going to treatment.
You know, man, that's really why I started doing podcasts with you. That's why I got on social media to begin with. Not why I got on social media, but why I'm on social media a lot, why I started putting up videos, because just like you were saying about this family had a preconceived idea about what an intervention was, a vast majority of the population has that same idea that it's just going to be this big blow up, that it's confrontational, that it's, you know, they're going to storm out and it's all about anger and yelling and screaming and it won't work. So really, like, my passion is getting out here and letting people know that it's just not that way. And really, there's so many professionals that work in behavioral health that don't know what an intervention is. And the more we can educate people that, you know, it doesn't look like someone screaming and yelling. It doesn't even have to look like a professional showing up, but the family can get some guidance to help pull them out of their own weeds, you know, help get them out of their own weeds and give them some strategy, give them a map, give them a destination. Most people that I talk to on an initial session or at the family and friends or the first call, whatever, I said, well, we've been dealing with this a long time. They say, everyone says that we've been dealing with this for years. And I'm like, do you have a place lined up that you would like them to go? And they say, no. I said, well, you don't have a destination. You first, let's get a destination. Because without a destination, you're just kind of wandering around. But if we can get a destination, then it's about, okay, how do we get there? And then you start plotting a course of what it's supposed to look like and what turn should we do here and where do we exit here and what way do we go? Do we go north, south, east, or west? Like you got a destination, then you can build the map to it.
That's a great analogy, because if you're telling people, if everybody has a compass and you say, okay, I want everybody to set your compass to 129 degrees and I want you to chart a course and everybody follow that heading and go at 129 degrees, they may not all get to the same destination because they may be starting out at different points. And it's not just about saying, hey, we want to get them to treatment. You could say that and everybody might say, yeah, okay, let's do that. Let's get them to treatment. But unless you have a clear starting point and a heading on how to get there and sometimes somebody to guide you through that, people are going to get separated and lost along the way, even though the heading is the same, the goal is the same. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Intervention on call has been a wonderful thing. It's been something that I think you and I both have seen, not just with the families we've worked with, but with the other providers on the platform, that so many families have been able to find a way to get help without ever having to actually go to the expense of hiring somebody like you or me. And, you know, we can talk about what treatment programs are going to be the good fit. We can talk about which family members, like there's so many different things that we're able to work through with some of these families that just clear the water, that just all of a sudden it's like, okay, now we have a way forward. And, it's just been, it's a great idea. I'm so glad you came up with it. And I'm so glad that I get to be a part of it.
Man, I am so grateful you are as well. And, you know, when you said something very powerful just a moment ago, as you said that their goal is to get someone to treatment. And and of course I get it, because families are in the crisis and they're in the mayhem. And they're like, geez, if they would just go to treatment, we'd have some freedom. We'd have some relief. Like, just go to treatment. But they get stuck on that nearsighted goal. The result of an intervention 93% of the time is they go to treatment. But that's just where it starts. Like, you want the family, and this is what I press to my families that they call and get on sessions with me, is like, look, wellness is the goal. Family wellness is your target. The stop for that for one of your loved ones in this family group is treatment. But it has to go beyond that. Mm-hmm. It moves beyond treatment. It moves past that. It's this is a journey that is. So don't put your eyesight, don't put your crosshairs so nearsighted is just treatment. You know, because what they'll fall into is, well, Johnny went to treatment. He's home. Let's go back to the way things were, minus the drugs and alcohol. And then the next thing you know, they're so shocked that the drugs and alcohol have made their way back in. Right? It's and in these sessions that we're doing, like I had one last night and like 15 minutes in, because I'd had a previous session with them. This time we incorporated more family members. They were able to incorporate more family members because it wasn't a, hey, will you be a part of an intervention? It was about, hey, would you get on a call with a professional, let him hear what he has to say and see what we can do? And they were all on board for that. There was no pressure about them feeling like they were being sold an intervention. In fact, I grow to probably greater lengths than I should, because at 15 minutes in, they're like, yeah, no, we're going to want you to come out. And I'm like, well, you may, but let's investigate this further to see if maybe you really definitely do want me to come out. Let me explain things all the way. Let me show you and explain to you what it would look like if you guys did it on your own, what to look out for, and then see what would happen if you had a professional come out, and then you make your decision.
Yeah.
And they made their decision.
And that's what I tell families all the time. It's like, let's do this first. And then once you have all the information, then you get to decide, having all the information at your disposal, whether or not you think you can do this yourself or not.
Our job is to give the information, not sell anything.
I agree.
And when I am, and I'm going to be, and you know, Matt, I want to speak on this a little bit because it's really important to me, and I hope that it's appropriate. But I'm going to be completely transparent. When I'm, you know, historically, interventionists, you get a call and you're on the phone with a family for an hour. And that's as a human being, like that's an hour of your time or an hour and a half of your time. And then maybe another hour phone call and you haven't been compensated for your time. So you start feeling a little debt, like, hey, because this is how we feed our families. This is how I pay my bills. This is my living. It's my occupation. And that's OK. It's absolutely OK for that. But I get, as a human, I'm like, all right, man, I gotta try and close this case. And I find myself like, it falls into somewhat of a salesy. And I didn't like that.
I have to do to get you to drive off the lot today in this beauty?
Right. I mean, not like that. You know what
I mean. I know. But I'm making light of it.
Is like, hey, you know, look, you booked an appointment. Let me give you the information.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is more relaxed and more productive. Absolutely more productive. My families, I've found since sessions on IFC, when it comes to intervention day or the rehearsal, they're much more prepared.
Oh yeah.
They're much more engaged.
I've seen that too.
The fear of intervention is off the table. Yeah, they're nervous about what's gonna happen, but the unknown, but they're not freaking out. Come intervention day, they're more engaged, more prepared.
And part of our job too, especially in that rehearsal the night before, is to really infuse the situation with as much confidence and calm energy as we can, because I've experienced that the more anxiety and the more fear people walk into that room with, the more powerful this problem is becoming before anybody opens their mouth.
Yeah.
And so if that person who were there to really love in that moment, if they can experience that just in people's behaviors, like, I'm glad to be here. I'm really glad to be here and be a part of this with you, without saying a word, just being able to show that in the way that they show up and the way that they're giving that person a hug. And there's just this fearlessness to it. It really disarms the majority of that fear of that front end part of the conversation of, okay, what's going to happen when they find out this is an intervention? Well, they already know.
Yeah.
Like it's so rare that I show up and somebody's like, is everybody okay? Like, what's going on? Is somebody in the hospital? Is somebody die? Like, they always know it's an intervention.
Yeah. That's a dead giveaway.
Exactly. Well, here's the people that I'm closest to in my life and a total stranger that looks like he knows what he's here to talk about. So this is an intervention. They always know.
Yeah. Yeah, they know. They know. And they have a little fear even beforehand that one's coming. You know, they know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, how many times have you heard a family say, you know, hey, Sam, I think they know something's going on. Well, what do you mean? Well, they just told me that if I'm thinking about doing an intervention, that I better not. They're going to be really mad at me. And it's like, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's awesome. The fact that they're aware that an intervention might be coming tells me that they know exactly that that's what they need.
Yep. Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
You know, I had one book today for an actual intervention, but they can't do it until May 1st to get everybody together and all, which is, you know, that usually doesn't go out that long. It's usually... Now, for me, on average, about 4 days time I'm booked.
Yeah.
The time we do the intervention. But they're like, well, we can't do it till May 1st. And I'm just like, well, that's okay. I mean, as long as you guys aren't concerned that, you know, going to burn the house down or, you know, that she's physically safe or they're physically safe or he's physically safe, then, you know, we can do that. We'll monitor the situation. We have to jump in quicker. We will. But this time will give us some time for you to communicate with your loved one in a different manner over a period of time, so they'll know that things in the family are changing, that they're going to be more likely to believe you when you approach them on intervention day.
When you have a family like that, where and I have this on a pretty regular basis, where they'll say, okay, we want to do this, but we can't do this for a number of days or weeks. How does that change the way you prep a family?
I have them, well, I'll give them the letter format. But I let them know. I said, look, you know, you're more than likely not going to work on this letter until just a couple of days before the intervention because you're going to be tossing around. And really, I don't really want you to start the letter right now. I want you to start just being aware of what's going on around. Raise your awareness. Make notes. You have plenty of time to make notes and thoughts and put them on paper. And then a couple of days before the intervention, you can compile them and then get your letter. And then at the rehearsal, we'll go over it and put it all together in a better way. But I also have them, we all get on a group text, all the members of the team. And I, you know, look, I like to get my interventions done. I have some fear sometimes that families will start getting cold feet because the crisis is, or the event, the further away you get from the event, you know, they can be like, oh, well, you know, it's, you know, it really wasn't that bad, you know?
He really seems like he's doing better.
Oh yeah. He's doing great.
And the whole reason is because the family's starting to get prepared. They're starting to get organized. And all of a sudden that energy is in the home or, you know, wherever the environment is, that person just absorbs that energy. And it's like, oh, wait a minute, something's going different here.
Yeah.
They know it.
Yeah.
And so of course they're going to start showing up differently without saying a word. And the family's picking up on that. It's like, wait a minute. He's starting to do a little bit better. I'm like, okay, here's why.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. I see that all the time.
Yeah. I check in with them every day or have them check in with me. And, you know, any communication that they have, I have them, you know, attempt to use text as much as they can. I know when they're in the home, it's hard to do that and that's impossible. But, you know, if you start feeling yourself getting pulled down a rabbit hole of debate or pulled into some manipulation, and you know when it's coming, exit the situation for a little bit. Say, you'll be right back with them. Get on the phone with me. Back away. Let's get some strategy and an effective response. And, you know, it gives me more live time in action for them to practice what we're going to do with the intervention.
Yeah. Yeah. I the only thing that I do differently is that I have them start writing their letters right away. And the reason is what you had already said is that I want them engaged in some sort of action. So I also want them prepped early so that let's say we're doing this on May 1st, like in your situation, you and I both know that the possibility of a crisis is not, it's likely. They're, you know, that's kind of what got them to the point where they're talking to us in the first place. And so I like to get them prepared early as far as the homework goes and just kind of the nuts and bolts of the intervention so that in the event that there's a crisis, if there's, you know, they get picked up by the police, or if they end up in the hospital, or if something happens, everybody's ready. All we have to do is change our timeline.
Yeah.
And it seems to keep people on track. It seems to kind of focus those thoughts early on in the process. And then it's just about making sure that we kind of keep that momentum going without losing traction. And it will generally, you know, if I start to see them like, well, he's doing better. I'm like, well, 3 days ago, you sent me a copy of your letter. Why don't you go back and read that and tell me 3 days ago how things were looking? And then let's talk about, do you remember what you wrote? And it's like, in 3 days, you're changing, your energy starting to shift, and your loved ones picking up on that. And so, of course, they're starting to adapt as well. It's only normal. And so what you're seeing is the results of the work that we're about to do, even though we haven't done it yet.
Man, that is brilliant, Matt Brown. Very simple, but brilliant. That I hadn't, you know, we've scrambled to write some letters at some times. You know, I think that, you know, I'm really glad I know you. You make me a better interventionist, bud.
Likewise. You know, so likewise.
We complement each other well, it seems. We were meant to do this together. We were.
Absolutely.
Way back in the beginning of when we first met, back in 2009. Or, yeah, 2009 or 2010, somewhere along in there.
Yeah, I think it was 2010. And, no, it was 2009 because it was in Elgin, Texas.
Yeah, yeah. I just didn't know if you were there because I entered in 2009. I didn't know if you were on the in the beginning of the new year or towards the end of the
It was towards the end. Yeah, okay. It was. I think it was early December.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. 2009. It was, man. I'm so grateful for that time. You know, you've been a good friend to me, Matt. You know, coming out to my you traveled all the way across the country to be with me and my dad's time of passing, and I'll never forget that. And I felt really uncomfortable, to be honest with you, because deep down inside, you know, look, I'm a man of freedom and I'm a man of sobriety, and I pride myself on seeking God and being at peace, and you know, and being okay with myself and being authentic. And but deep down inside, there was a piece of me that felt I didn't deserve that. And I know Brené Brown talks about that a lot, the shame and feeling unworthy and our value. And that's why I can't wait to hear her tomorrow. And
why do you think shame is such a problem, especially for those of us that struggle with mental health or addiction issues?
Why do I think shame is such a big,
well, I mean, humans in general, but I think it manifests differently for those of us that deal with substance abuse or alcohol abuse.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll tell you, look, my anger can escalate sometimes, but nothing spirals like shame with me. I mean, quick and powerful. Like it's like shooting down a plane and it going into another. That's how fast,
yeah,
I can spiral into shame deeply.
Well, I don't want to do her any injustices by trying to paraphrase some of the things that she's written, but you know, in her writings on shame, she talks a lot about what I think she refers to them as, like, the gremlins, the shame gremlins. And you know, when she starts to go into that spiral, she kind of describes it as, you know, the gremlins are active, and the thought processes that surround that, and, you know, not being good enough and comparing ourselves to other people, and you know, just all of these barriers to, I mean, really, because she talks so much about shame and authenticity, I think she really looks at shame as a barrier to authenticity. And that when we are being authentic, we're really in the least amount of shame.
Mm-hmm.
And I struggle with that all the time. You know, whether it's I'm comparing myself to other people or trying to act in a perfectionistic way or just trying to look cool and be in control or, you know, whatever it is, like, it's all a barrier to authenticity. And she does a great job of really explaining how that correlates with shame. And so if for those of you who are listening, if you don't know who Brené Brown is, I would recommend the first book that you pick up of hers be The Gifts of Imperfection. That book, I read it a couple of years ago for the first time, and my life has not been the same since. It's a wonderful, wonderful book. And it's about a 4-hour audiobook. She narrates it herself, and that's generally how I will listen to it. But I'll listen to it probably once a quarter just to kind of remind myself of it. And, you know, I travel a lot, as do you, and a lot of times when I'm driving around in the car, you know, going to and from an intervention or to and from an airport, that's generally when I'll pop in an audiobook, and she's one of my favorites.
Let me ask you something, Matt. Has putting up video content on social media platforms and catching some hate, you know, all the trolls and stuff, how has that helped you in your shame or being authentic or your value of yourself?
The trap that I fall into is that I look for value in the response that I get to my videos sometimes. And if I don't get the response that I'm looking for, or if I catch some hate, if I let that define my value, I'm in big trouble. Mm-hmm. Just like with anything else, anybody's reaction to my life, you know, I can fall into that trap. And if I'm seeking approval and that's why I'm doing it, or if I recognize like, oh, it'd be really nice if I got, you know, a lot of response to this video, if a lot of people watch it or if a lot of people like it or, you know, whatever that is, if that's my thought going into it, man, I can get twisted up pretty quickly. If I do it because, hey, you know what, this is a thought that's really profound to me right now. This is a thought that I find myself thinking about, and maybe somebody else might get some value out of this too. Then my mindset is different, and I can go in there and I can separate myself from the reactions and just say, you know what, this is the thought that I have. I'm going to put it out there into the world and let it live on its own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really helped me, you know. The more I do, and the older I get, and the more it's been really a trial by fire with social media and being authentic and being vulnerable and putting yourself out there like that and allowing those creative juices to flow. And then you get the hate, you know, and it's been vital to my growth to get the hate. It really has. Now, I'm not inviting hate in. I don't think that, you know, I don't want everybody to go out there and just give me a bunch of shit on social media. But, you know, when it's inevitable, it's going to happen with me put content out on social media. But it's really helped me. Like, I don't give two shits what anyone thinks about me most of the time. Most of the time now.
Right.
You know, so.
Well, I'm envious that you're going to get a chance to go see her live, get a selfie with her, send it to me. Hope it's fun. And yeah, I'd love to catch up with you next week when we do our session from our weekly recording from Portland and have you fill us in on how it went and what you got out of it.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, I'm even coming with some bunch of new shirts because, you know, the worst thing about traveling for work for me when I've got an event that I got to wear a button-up shirt is I like to travel light. I carry a bag, not a suitcase, and I folded up my good shirt from home and I chunked it into the bag. And I know sure as shit that it's going to be completely wrinkled because when I was in Charlotte Airport, I stopped by a shirt shop in the airport, saw a lady in there. I said, and I saw some shirts. They were a little pricey because they're in the airport. I said, look, I tell you what, I said, can you fold this shirt if I buy it? Can you fold it in such a way and put it in something in such a way that I won't have to iron it when I get to my destination? She said, absolutely. And this lady was an absolute, probably some OCD stuff, but she was a perfectionist in her shirt folding. I came out of that store with three shirts and a pair of pants folded perfectly, pulled them out of the bag. I don't have to iron shit. I am completely cool and comfortable. And I'm going to show
they're still sitting in your bag waiting for you to wear them in Portland, or did you get them today in on your way to Houston?
Here, she folded them up, packed them up. I'm going to wear them.
Look at that.
Brown. I found there this you go. Loophole, man. I'm not even going to pack a button-up shirt. I'm just going to buy one at the airport wherever I go.
Gonna buy shirts every time you travel.
Because, man, look, I carry the downy fat, you know, wrinkle free, but that works. It works great. But you know, when you really need that, I can't do that on the road. That's me. I can't, you know?
Well, you just have to stop giving a shit and stop ironing. And you know, I don't know when the last time I ironed a shirt was.
Yeah, but you're not showing up anytime that I've been where you are when you've traveled to me or we've met wherever and you've flown. You don't have wrinkles all in your shirt. Your shit looks like it just came out the dry cleaners.
The best I do is I hang it up in the closet the night before when I get in, and that's about all I do. And if it's still wrinkled in the morning, I'll, you know, hang it up in the bathroom somewhere while I'm showering with that steamy, you know, the steam going on, and hopefully it comes out. But I don't know that I've ever, I'm trying to remember the last time. Oh, you know what? The last time I ironed a shirt was actually when I was in Virginia coming to see you at your dad's celebration of life. I did iron my shirt that day. So
right.
There you go.
I don't know how
I ironed my shirt for you, Sam.
Thank you. See, I'm undeserving. Matt, I don't even know how we got onto that, but thank you for everything.
You deserve every bit of it. And I'm the one who benefits, I think, more than you do from this friendship. But thank you, Sam.
Dude, I appreciate you.
I'll see you in about a week.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Yeah, man.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you again soon.
Be well.
Thanks again for listening to The Party Wreckers. If you liked what you heard, please leave us a rating and a review. This helps us get the word out to more people. To learn more or to ask us a question we can answer in a future episode, please visit us at partywreckers.com. And remember, don't enable addiction, ever. On behalf of the Party Wreckers, Matt Brown and Sam Davis, let's talk again soon.